I would like to welcome you all here today to our Let's Talk Open Discussion Series, sponsored by the Association of Gastrointestinal Motility Disorders, also known as AGMD. For those who are on the program who don't yet know me, my name is Mary Angela. That's my first name. DeGrazia DiTucci, my last. I'm a longtime patient who suffers from multiple digestive motility disorders and a host of other non-digestive diseases, which I'm sure some of you can appreciate as you're going through the same thing. I also would like to point out that we have a volunteer, longtime volunteer, Laura, who will be joining us here today, and she is going to be participating as a volunteer in training so she can join our other gastroparesis program and eventually create her own under the auspices of our organization. Laura, do you want to just say hello to everybody?
Yeah. Hi, everyone. This is Laura. I am here for anything you need.
Oh, that's very nice. Thank you. So during the program, you'll hear us say this over and over. If you want to participate in the conversation by speaking and you have trouble jumping into the conversation, all you have to do is call out Mary Angela or Laura, and one of us will facilitate you so that you'll be able to jump right in. During this program, I encourage you to share your input during the discussion. We want to make sure that everyone has a chance to speak. So if you keep that in mind as you're talking, because we only have a little bit amount of time, and this is a huge topic of concern. And we also ask you to be mindful of other people's privacy. So during the program, please do not share your personal contact information with anyone else on the program or request their contact information from others. If you are interested in communicating with somebody on the program, you can get in touch with our organization. You can either call or email, and I will then in turn ask those people if they would also like to communicate with you. We've just found this to be very, very helpful for participants. And when you speak, if you could just say your first name or make up a name so that we can identify who's speaking with what that person is saying. These phones are going crazy today. Today, our focus will be on the impact of digestive motility disorders on self-esteem. Sadly, this is a part of so many patients' lives that are not readily addressed, and yet there are very few patients that are left unscathed by the disorder's attack on the mind as well as the body. So today, I just want to begin our discussion talking a little bit about the many ways in which living with a digestive motility disorder can greatly attack the patient's self-esteem. Some examples include when you're trying to cope with the unpredictable symptoms, social isolation, strained or lost relationships and not being believed, surgical scars, belly distension, body image, the inability to work, burden on the finances, losing one's former self as a result of chronic illness. Each one can tear at an individual's confidence and self-esteem. In my own long journey with digestive motility disorders, I experienced piece by piece the shredding of my confidence and self-esteem. Early on, I lost my physical appearance as I watched all my feminine bodily curves disappear into a skeleton. It was just hanging onto skin. Looking in the mirror, I'd see a person who was merely a shadow of how I looked before, and it was heart-wrenching. Not being believed by medical professionals as well as certain family members and friends tore at my heart so deeply that I began to doubt myself whether I was truly ill or it was just a figment of my imagination. To this day, when I go to my many doctor appointments or if I'm in a hospital setting, I automatically am ready to defend myself, as circumstances have trained me to do. Mm-hmm. The unpredictable nature of the symptoms has dug deeply into my confidence as well. never knowing how I'm going to feel at any given moment, gives legs to a checklist of what I should do and how I should prepare, all the what ifs. The hardship of my medical class has rooted itself so greatly into our lives, as I had to surrender my career and all my jobs and obligations, and instead of contributing to finances, I became a huge burden. Having nearly gone through bankruptcy on 4 occasions, all because of me, is a guilt that I still carry today. And when my husband recently got laid off, the pain became even more acute, and having that medical insurance is a huge factor in which job my husband would take. And this has been a painful journey throughout our whole lives together. I'm one of the fortunate ones, and I understand because I have such a loving husband, family, and wonderful friends. And that has really been helpful in my adjusting to my life with disease. But I realize, and I've learned, that this is not the case in so many other people's circumstances. Another instrumental piece was the way I was raised by my 2 wonderful parents, who by their mentoring, strong determination, and character, built such an incredible foundation for me to live by. Losing so much of what I was, who I was, and all that I had has been a humbling experience as I have moved from disbelief to acceptance, living over 36 years with chronic progressive diseases. So all of these have certainly taught me great lessons, and some of those I'll talk about later on, but with all of the different phases and all the different levels of attack, from my being a once totally confident person to a person who still has maintained some sort of confidence in certain situations, but behind that confident person is that constant trepidation of what if. And if one certain thing triggers that will send me back to where I was, it becomes a loud echo in my mind and a reminder of what I'm going through and what I've been through. So a lot of that self-esteem coming back has been built upon my success in learning to accept what is in my life. So on that note, I ask all of you here today, whether you are new to your journey or whether you are a veteran that has been coping with it for many years, what impact has your digestive motility disorder had on your self-esteem? State your first name, and on that note, would anyone like to begin sharing their input? Bring something up that relates to that in your own life, or you can relate to something that I've already spoken about. Anybody like to begin?
This is Karen. I'll begin.
I've had
this disease since 93. It was diagnosed, but I was sick a while before that. And it's, like you said, it just takes your toll. And I know just the other day, my husband and I, well, he had to medically retire 2 years ago. So that really hurt our income because, like you said, you're not prepared always for those things. And we had to go down to the hospital and ask for some help. And that really hurts you. Mm-hmm. And it's a stress factor, too, I believe.
Absolutely.
So, you know, that's where we're at right now because I'm in the hospital every 2 to 3 months for 4 to 5 days, and that adds up after a while. So,
it adds up quickly. It adds up very quickly. Of note, we are in our open discussion. Let's talk series in the coming months. We are going to be having a program just based on the financial burden of living with digestive motility disorders. Because, I mean, truly, it not only impacts the finances of your life, but it also, you carry that burden of guilt.
Right.
Just deal with that. And once it infiltrates into your guilt, then that embeds itself and works your self-esteem. Like so many other people on the call, I'm sure. Anybody else like to comment on that or talk about the other aspects?
Well, Mary Angela, this is Anand, and I know with me I've been diagnosed since it'll be 12 years in December that I started with the motility, and since I've gotten the motility disorder, I have days where my self-esteem has gone down because for several reasons. One, not being able to go teach like I used to do as much, because what do I do if I have to vomit in public? I used to volunteer at a daycare, and because of the vomiting and all, I had to quit that. And then there are days where, self-esteem sometimes has gone down because of not being believed by certain people. The other day, Mom said to me, "Well, your symptoms aren't worn enough to see Dr. Mark." And I said, "Mom, I feel that they are." And it was hard not believing me because she couldn't see the, you know, because I was having the chills and the cold and the bacterial overgrowth and all of that on top of the fullness and, you know, vomiting. And it's hard because sometimes people don't believe that I am ill because to them I don't look it, but I can definitely feel it. Also, too, sometimes, you know, like I was saying to Mary Angela before we started, for those of you that know, they wanted me to take the vaccine, and the medicine's like $646, but I don't have that kind of funding, you know. So, you know, the financial, but then there have been some gains, too, which I'll share later.
You know, and thank you for sharing that. I wonder if anybody on this call is, their self-esteem has really been affected as a result of how they look. You know, if you've had a lot of surgeries, if you lost a lot of weight, even if you gained a lot of weight as a result of this, or some people just have that, what I call the little Buddha belly, where it's always swollen, and you might be pregnant. Does anybody, when they look in the mirror, feel so differently as a result of digestive motility?
Well, Mary Angela, this is Anand again, and a lot of people have said to me, you know, you've gained a lot of weight. And I, you know, and I try to tell them it's because of the motility disorder. I'm 236 pounds, you know, and so they've said I've gained a lot. So it can be hard, self-esteem.
Yeah, and that's
right.
Reflecting on what other people say. And I know that a whole bunch of self-esteem. I'm sorry, go ahead.
This is Karen. And people will say, but you look so good to be so sick, or to be sick.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they only knew what your insides were doing.
Yeah, exactly. Honestly,
this is Marilyn.
Marilyn,
is
go ahead.
And I have the opposite effect because I've lost so much weight.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm one of the people who I'm very thin now, and my abdomen is always distended. So everyone, I get the pregnancy question all the time from those who don't, you know what's going on with me. I have a hard time finding clothes that fit well because I'm thin, yet I have this huge abdomen, so nothing fits right. When I look in the mirror, in fact, I really don't even like looking in the mirror because I don't like the way that I look anymore.
Totally understand. And it is. It's such a huge factor. I know there are so many people who really don't spend a lot of time in the mirror. On the other hand, in order to make the patient feel better, some patients sometimes will put the makeup on if they're a girl and try to look the best they can, get all dressed up. Even men do this too, so that they'll feel better. And then when they go into a social situation, it makes it harder because then people don't believe you even more. And it's just to make you feel better. But then when somebody says, wow, you know, you look so good, it eats at your self-esteem again because you're saying, wow, I'm in conflict. I want to look good. And yet when I look good, it gets worse with people saying, you look so good. And it totally, totally distorts and does not qualify all the suffering that you go through. So I'm sure everybody here totally understands. Laura, can you just cite upon some of the impact that it's had on you?
Oh, it was an incredible impact. I have spent most of my life, self-confidence was never an issue for me. I have always been very forward, very A-type personality, you know, I'll speak up in a crowd. And the effects of this disease, the first few years, my first 3 years that I had it, I spent about a year every 3 weeks or so in the hospital. And then after that, I started dropping weight and I lost 87 pounds. And I'm not that big of a girl. I'm only 5'1". And it was horrible to look in the mirror. You know, at points I looked good on the way down, but then my husband's like, your skin and bones. And everybody's going, oh, you look great. And I'm going, no, I look dead. But I have one mirror that came with my dresser and it only does from the waist up. And I don't even look at it for my body because I have the gastroparesis bloat that takes me from my size 10 to a 2X at any given time. And I have to have clothes that fit all the way in the middle because it just blows up and goes away and blows up. And it's horrible because when it blows up, you get the people who are like, you pregnant? I'm like, you know, pretty old to be pregnant. No, thank you. But you know you feel fat. And people look at you as if you're fat, not bloated. And that really can affect your self-esteem. And then my biggest thing was losing my job. I had a career. I was going places. Life was my, you know, beautiful, just married, beautiful life ahead of me. And it all crashed. And my career was everything to me. I took such pride in it. And I lost my purpose at the time of I have no purpose in life. And that can take your self-esteem right into the toilet. Mary Angela fortunately helped me find my purpose, which I thank her every day of my life. But without having stuff to do that satisfies your mental part of you, your self-esteem is always going to be lower. And what I've found is that, you know, we all have to come up with our new normals. None of us are going to be exactly the same as we were before. So I put it in my mind that I was going to get my self-esteem back. And no matter what people say or do, if I comment, I comment. If I don't, I don't. But I know I'm doing the best I can with this disease. And I'm doing better than a lot of doctors can help you. You know, I've been to too many of them. But I've picked up pieces along the way. And now my self-esteem is much better because I've really have gotten to the point where I don't care. If they don't want to know about it, they don't want to think about it or learn it, fine. I don't let other people bother me, and I take great pride in everything that I do. Because of this disease and because of all the CIPs and everybody else, just getting out of bed in the morning is a huge accomplishment sometimes. So that all things like that help my self-esteem. Okay, I get up today. I'm not throwing up right now. All right, excellent. And things like that, learning ways to avoid or live with your disease can raise your self-esteem just in that factor. And then finding some kind of purpose, whether it's making crafts or anything. I mean, any hobby anybody can do. Your self-esteem will grow. Slowly but surely, but it will come back. And I'm now to
very
the point
well
where
said.
I'll talk to anybody. I don't mind. And I like it this way better. I don't like being introverted and not talking to people.
I think that, and Laura very well put, I think that, you know, so many of us, especially after you've been in your journey for a long time, I don't know, Marilyn, if that's your case. I know it is with some of the other callers on here. But the longer you are in the journey, the more time you have to adjust and adapt and learn to accept what you're going through. But at the same time, even when you reach that point of acceptance, and I'm pretty sure that many of you on the program will attest to this, that as confident as you may feel at the point where you are, like Laura had indicated, there will all of a sudden be one instance or a certain incident that will trigger you back to attacking your self-esteem. And then you go back to square one until you learn mentally to cope with that. So many people, really, their self-esteem is weighed upon what others think of them. And that's a huge part of coping with your illness. And at the same time, as Karen had indicated, as well as myself, looking in that mirror, and Laura, looking in that mirror and not seeing that attractive person that you once were as a result of what this disease does to you, is that other level of attack. And once you do take that cursory look of your body without clothes, it can just, you know, tear away at your heart. So these are just some of the things where it attacks. But I know in my life, I try as hard as I can not to base my self-esteem or take what people are thinking of about me that seriously, because I look at who is saying it. Now, if it's a doctor, that's different because that's my medical care. I care what they're thinking, because that is a part of my treatment. But as far as other people, because I have been burnt so many times, I try as hard as I can, and I'm quite successful at it, is not letting their opinions intrude upon what I'm able to do or how I look. And that was a skill that I had to really, really struggle to learn with. The decision comes. Do I want to be governed by what other people are saying and doing or thinking? Or do I want to be governed by what I want to do and where I think I should be going, along with, as many of you know, my strong faith governs so much of everything in my life. So, you know, I'm wondering if anybody goes back and forth with that ability to deal with their self-esteem. Karen, I know you are back in that point with just dealing on the finances. Do you yo-yo back and forth with your self-esteem, the way you're looking at yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
because I'm one that's put on weight.
Mm-hmm.
But in the very beginning, I was down to 92 pounds, and I'm 5'5".
Mm-hmm.
But now I weigh 155.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I can't figure out why, because, you know, I don't eat that much.
Yeah. That's a big question that doctors still don't have the answer about.
Right.
On the aside, it's one of the most frequent questions I get. And I have approached doctors on many occasions, and they just don't have the answer to that at this point. But it is starting to be addressed, which is encouraging. But, how many people now look at their body and what they're seeing is not what they like seeing as a result of the motility disorder. Some people just have that propensity of not to like anything about themselves. And other people are okay with the way they look, but then as a result of this disease, like Marilyn said, and Laura, the bellies are always swollen. And, you know, when you look in the mirror and you see that swollen belly, that's mm-hmm. kind of hard, because even if you try your hardest to tuck it in, it's still there.
Right.
And then when you feel uncomfortable because you're so full or your clothes are getting tight, that makes you feel even worse.
Right.
So, yeah.
Karen, this is
Anybody?
Laura. I just wanted to put a note on what Karen was saying. My doctor, my primary care doctor, who has turned out, she's an endocrinologist, so she was a diabetic specialist, which I am.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually went to her as a referral for osteoporosis, I got broken bones because of this disease, gastroparesis, and not having enough nourishment. And like I said, I had lost 87 pounds. I was down to about 79 pounds. I was not looking very well. But as time went on, now I bloat incredibly. And my doctor, who jokingly says this, but she is better at gastroparesis than most GPs I've met. They jokingly say it, but it's true, because she says it's them. Laura is the only patient I have. Every single time she comes in here, you can tell her weight by her bloat, because it is actually, the bloat is actually poop sitting in there fermenting, not moving. So sometimes, you know, I weigh 170, or I'll go in and it's 160. Well, I didn't really lose any. I look the same, but I just went heavily. Or if I'm really bloated, it's because of the poop. Now, that's not for everybody. That's just my doctor is like, that's what's wrong with you, Laura. And I'm like the only person she actually says, you know, because people say that, oh, I get, you know, big bloat making me weigh more. Well, in my case, it does. And that may be some of us why it does.
Well, I bloat, but I had most of my large intestine removed 2 years ago. But I still have the bloating.
Really?
Yeah.
And the bloating
is
almost
that,
as bad as everything else.
Well, it is, because you feel so uncomfortable. And that just, you know, when you feel it's like when women would get their period, you feel a little bit uncomfortable there. Well, now you have this constantly, that same distension or feeling just lousy. And if your gut isn't working right by, you know, God, it affects every aspect within your body. You can't think correctly. You can't, you don't have the energy level. You may even experience skin problems, the whole gamut. If there isn't one part that isn't affected by that digestive tract. So, like Marilyn, what was the weight that you said you were?
Well, right now I'm at 106 pounds, and I'm 5'9".
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So I understand, like Marilyn, I'm only 78 pounds. Not proud of it, but that's just where I am right now. There was a time when I was down to 69 pounds, and then, by the grace of God, I started to gain weight. But then I was kept on gaining weight, and in my case, a doctor found that I had hypothyroidism. So as a result of that, the reactions from people were totally different when I was so emaciated to when I started to put weight on as a result of a thyroid problem, people began saying, oh, you must be fine now. Look at the weight you're putting on. Whereas before they would say, oh, you're just not accepting. You have an eating disorder. Interesting to see how people just provide this information when you ask them, or, you know, even join in a conversation when you say, hey, hi, how are you doing? They'll say, oh, you know, I'm doing okay, but you look great today. And people, well, thank you very much. That always affected me so greatly. There were so many tears, honestly, that I cried over as a result of people saying that to me. Because it was another aspect of not being believed. You don't understand the suffering that I'm going through. Why are you even saying that when it wasn't even a part of the conversation? It was definitely on how I look. And even in medical situations, when I was first trying to be diagnosed, and it took me 5 years, I remember this nurse who was just, I will never forget her. She kept bringing the scale in every morning. And if I was losing weight, she'd reprimand me. And if I was gaining a pound by doing nothing different, she would applaud me. Oh, you're such a good girl. And I was in my 20s. I wasn't a little kid, but that's how I was treated. And I learned to dread that scale so much. And it was such a low point for me because I was trying to get a diagnosis. I was trying to be believed. And then I have this scale, which was my enemy, because I was being judged by my weight and not what was going on. And still, to this day, there are doctors who will say, oh, you look so good. And I just sit there going, do you have any clue? You know, what am I doing here? So, you know, I'm sure so many of you have gone through things like that. And you really can't judge us by how we look. Some of us hide behind smiles. Some of us try to be strong and positive in front of people, and then when we get in our own private environment, we crumble. You know, how many of you try to hide your symptoms in public?
I do, Marianne.
Yes.
I do.
Yeah. Marilyn, do you?
It really depends on how I'm feeling. Sometimes I'm confident about it, and in those days I don't mind, you know, like putting it out there, and I'm okay with it. But then there are other times when my confidence and self-esteem is so low, and yeah, I do try to hide it.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? It's almost as if we're ashamed of what we're going through, and yet you shouldn't be ashamed. But we, you know, so many people, I have talked to very few people since 1991, since this organization began, that have said, you know, I just go public with this right off the bat. Sometimes they will after a while, but it's so hard because people still don't feel comfortable talking about digestive things. And even the ads on TV that they're more frequently appearing, I laugh at some of them. I'm going, why don't you just come out there and tell it like it is, instead of having these symbolisms or these little things and you're not coming right out front and saying, here it is.
Just
you
say
have constipation. Yep, we have diarrhea. This is what we're going through. This is what it is. Vomit. This is vomiting. This is a day in our life. And you're not seeing that. And I just want to wring everybody's neck and go, get it out there. Just tell it like it is, which is, you know, one of the main purposes of our organization, is to grow awareness. And it's drawn by all of you who are suffering. That's our job, is to make others aware. Was there anybody who was a very, like Laura had indicated, and I certainly was, very confident before their experiences with digestive motility, and then it got stripped away as a result of that? Or were you one of those people who came into life with that rather low self-esteem, and then this just made it lower and lower and lower? I talk to so many people who are like that as well. Everybody here, Prisa. Go ahead, Ina.
For me, I was confident, and then with the motility, the self-esteem got kind of low sometimes with motility, rather than, for me, you know, I was illness, I was always going out and stuff. But now with motility, the self-esteem has gotten low because I never know how people are going to act, you know, and if, you know, if I have a problem and, you know, so I try to stay with people that understand me the most, because then if I have a problem, they understand what I'm going through.
That's so important to, let me ask all of you here. Do all of you have a family or a friend or people in your lives who are integral in the support of what you're going through? Whether it's a spouse, whether it's a sister, whether it's no matter who, do all of you have somebody in place who is, you know, right there for you?
This is Karen. I have my husband, and if anybody's done research on this, he does so much research on this, and he understands me more than anybody understands me. I tell him sometimes he understands me more than I understand myself. And I think that's a great support system to have.
Oh, that's great. I mean, that truly is such a wonderful support system because you know you have something.
But I know my mom thinks that she understands, and she's actually gone to the doctor several times so she could hear things. But yet, every now and then, I lose that support because she just she doesn't get it all.
Yeah.
She doesn't want to believe one of her kids is that sick.
Yeah.
I think that might be a lot of people. Your parents, you know, you don't want to believe your child is sick.
Yeah, my mom, you know, she doesn't want to, in the beginning and even now, she doesn't want to believe that, you know, there's vomiting. Or in the beginning, it was, why do I have to give enemas every day? And she had to go to the doctor, and the doctor said, look, she has to have enemas every day for the rest of her life because she can't feel it. She needs to go to the bathroom, and it must be done. And, you know, it's hard. And then, but certain other family don't understand. My mom and my sister understand the most. And I'll be back, you all. I have to head to the bathroom. I'll be back in a second.
Okay.
Yeah. See, having that support, I'm sure as low as your self-esteem can get, it still makes life easier, Karen, in your situation, having that support. And having your spouse really understand. It really boosts the self-esteem because you have somebody who you can trust, rely on, and help and support and understand and be there for you. That's huge. Does anybody else have somebody in their life or people in their lives who are supportive? Or are you in that place where you don't have anybody? Go ahead.
This is Marilyn. 2 years ago, I had to move back home with my parents because I have one daughter, and it got to the point where they were coming to help me so much. So when my lease was up on my apartment, they asked me to move back home, you know. So I am blessed because I have a beautiful family that supports me, that loves me, that prays for me, and checks in with me regularly, the ones who don't, you know, live with me. So I'm blessed with sisters that show me that support. I actually have great friends who show a lot of love and support and who check in with me regularly as well. So, and you're right, it does make a big difference. I could not imagine going through this and dealing with this illness without that support. I really can't even imagine doing that.
Yeah, that's wonderful. What about you, Laura?
Yeah, I have the wonderful support of my husband, and I could never have made it as far as I did without him. He's been here since the beginning, learning it all with me since the beginning, but has fought for me, and he's worse than I am when it comes to other members of my family not either not understanding or not acting like they do. He gets very annoyed at them. I've also found, which I think I heard a little bit here, and it seems a lot more everywhere, I have a large extended family. My family is just two kids in my family, me and my brother. But my mother was one of the 7 kids. There's, 21 grandchildren, and I have 21 cousins. And amazingly, after missing a few of the family, we all get together like near Christmas or a barbecue in the summer where we all get together. After missing a couple of those and them asking where I was, asking my mother and father, who just went into complete denial about the whole thing. I don't understand what happened to them, but all I'd get from my mother was, call your therapist, don't want to talk to you. And she'd hang up. Because apparently it was in my head. I don't know what they ever said, but somehow the rest of my family started to accept, not knowing what was going on, but that I have a disease that can come on in a second if it wants to, and that if I'm flaring, quote-unquote, with it, I go nowhere. So now when I go to any of these events, it actually really touches my heart that my relatives, who really know not much about it, some of them have learned a little, but they just know that I have a really bad disease, that I can go from being normal to not normal in a second. And all I get from all of them is, we are so glad you made it. We are so glad to see you. Glad you're feeling well enough to be here. And that is huge on a self-esteem. When they all didn't believe me and nobody knew, I just sat in my house and kind of crumbled because I had no one except my husband, who sat here with me. But it's really nice when other people, other than just your direct family, can understand. Lost most of my friends, because, fun now. You can't go out. You can't go drinking. You can't go out to eat, usually. And it's very hard. You lose all your self-esteem when everybody walks out on you and goes, yeah, there's nothing wrong with you. And your doctor has you do 82 psych evaluations because he thinks you're bulimic when you're, begging for food. It's very hard. But it is, it is nice when other people help, when other people even try to understand. Very helpful.
I wonder why when people talk about digestive motility disorder, that there's very, very little mentioned on both sides, the patient as well as the general public and medical, of the impact that digestive motility has on your self-esteem. I just wonder, what is the secret about letting people know how their comments, letting people know what it's like and how it affects you in so many different levels and attacks your self-esteem. Why that seems to be hidden from so much of the conversation. I don't have an answer. I don't know if any of you do. Everybody's speechless too. And that's why having this program and hearing other people share their experiences is so important, because it makes other people aware. Well, first of all, it makes us feel that we're not alone. And it makes other people very much aware of how this is like a cancer and affects your life in so many different ways, in so many different levels and intensity. So, I am sure it's like that with many diseases, but where this is something that in many cases attacks at night, nobody is expecting it to happen unless it's a genetic problem that we're born with, or it's you just learning that you have this and that it's just starting to make sense to you. I mean, if you're waiting for a diagnosis and you had to wait for months, years, weeks, whatever it may be, it's so important that people understand. I remember we did a questionnaire study years ago, which we are now working on a new one. And it was something that I presented at one of our symposiums. And not only did it talk about digestive motility disorders as they are, but then there were sections on other diseases and symptoms, conditions, disorders that patients have in addition to motility disorders that they're dealing with, but also all the various ways in which you learn about your digestion. How long did it take you before you got diagnosed? How did you feel when you got diagnosed? All the psychological ramifications. And it was so interesting that, and it was heartwarming to hear that some of the doctors came up to me after the program and wanted a copy of those studies. It was studies based on the patient population that we had within the organization. And they were so interested in all of the other facets of digestive motility, not only digestive motility itself, but other symptoms and diseases that patients have, along with that psychological part, and how long it took them to get diagnosed. And I had questions in there about self-esteem and ways in which it really affected them. So we need to do that again, and your input today is just so important to be a part of that and let others know. There's so many challenges that we experience on a daily basis, and each one can be a sword in your life, but also you can turn it around and realize how much you've changed as a result of it in hopefully positive ways. So there it is out there. And has anybody been affected? Now we've talked about finances and having that in your self-esteem. We've talked about how you look as a result of your self-esteem and being disbelieved, how that attacks your self-esteem. And Laura touched upon one important thing, and that is we talked about guilt. Karen was talking about that. But it's also about the purpose in life and your ability to refocus to finding another important course in your life. How many of you had careers that you had to give up, or jobs that you had to give up as a result of your digestive motility?
I did. I was a nurse.
So, Karen. And how did you feel once that happened?
Oh, horrible. Because I was an outgoing person then, and now I'm somewhat of a shy person. I loved my job. And then to go to be a homemaker, which my home was always clean and things, but I wasn't like an over compulsive person with my home and just different things like that. And then the financial end, so I got on disability. That was tough.
Yeah. In fact, I was talking to Laura earlier about that, that once you sign a disability, that bittersweet, brought it up here. So, and then how did you redirect mentally your purpose in life, or have you?
I don't think I have. I don't know what my purpose is, except to educate others on this.
Well, when you say accept to, let me speak. Well, before I elaborate on what Karen said, and you keep bringing up some really essential points. Anybody else on the call want to respond to what Karen is saying? and then I'm going to jump in with my commentary.
Hi, it's Laura. I came back.
Oh, Laura, I missed you.
I got disconnected.
You missed Karen just bared her soul. The whole thing was, and I was talking on the premise that you had brought up, is how as a result of digestive motility, you, and in Karen's case, losing her job, like in yours, like in mine, and Marilyn, I assume, in yours?
Mm-hmm.
Marilyn's still there, yeah. No, I was talking about losing your job or career as a result of digestive motility. And
no, I'm still working as a nurse.
Oh, you still are working?
Yeah.
So you have more nurses?
I mean, I'm working, it's part-time, but I work mm-hmm. as a nurse educator.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's great mm-hmm. to know.
Good for you.
One memorable point I remember in the course of this organization was actually from a nurse. She became a very dear friend and has since passed away. But when she had to lose her job, and she struggled, she worked in the surgical area. She had done so much, and she loved it. She was so passionate about it. And I remember the day that she called, and as she was speaking, she could barely get the words out. She was sobbing so much. And she said, I have lost the job of my lifetime, the job that I loved. And now mm-hmm. I have no purpose in my life. And at that time, God gave me the words to say, and I say it all the time to everybody who unfortunately is affected by digestive motility disorder, is that you now have a purpose in life. And if you're able to work, it's an extension of your purpose. As patients, it is now our obligated purpose to educate others, let other people know what you're going through, as well as educating about the facts of digestive motility, touching people's lives in ways that you don't even realize. Even during this program, as you're bearing your soul to people, you're doing more in your life than you realize. And to me, it's an amazing higher calling than doing what you're doing. In my particular case, I was a teacher. So I have learned that I am just redirecting my teaching skills into educating others. And I loved what I did. I still, you know, miss it greatly. But logically, I accepted, wow, this is the change in purpose and all those skills that I learned in teaching. I am now applying them to helping patients, and what a great calling that is. And as a nurse, you know, you have touched people's lives in your life, in your own life, in ways that you cannot measure. But now either you are doing it without working in that level, or as a Marilyn's case, still doing it. What a great calling. And I think there's no other greater calling than helping others and letting people be aware. Especially in the field of digestive motility, and even in Laura's case, her career, saying goodbye to it. Your career is now dedicated to helping others by your example, by your experiences, by your journey, especially in the area of digestive motility, where there is still so little information out there and misinformation. All of you should be very proud of this calling that you have and the purpose in your lives. It's humbling. I am humbled every day, and knowing that I am amongst people who are also doing the same thing. And this form of AGMD, our organization, is a humble platform for all of you to get involved as much as you want, for all of you to be able to share your lives with us. And anytime somebody speaks to me or communicates what they're going through, I'm always deeply moved and greatly affected. that should make all of you boost your self-esteem to the level of your purpose in life. Karen, I hope that helps.
Yeah, it does. I know whenever I am in the hospital, it seems like I always get a student nurse. So I do have time to educate some, or I feel like I'm educating somebody new on this disease.
And by doing so, Karen, you're not only helping yourself, but you're helping them and future patients. That's
right.
A huge thing. See that impact that maybe it's not obvious to you at that moment, but that trickle-down effect is lasting. That's huge.
Yeah.
That really is huge. And, Laura, you found that in your own life by helping other patients within this organization. I know you have spoken about this so many times. It builds your self-esteem and makes you feel good. And what a calling that is.
Yeah, it is actually, I have to say, more gratifying than now than my career was at the time. I didn't realize. I thought my career was, you know, it. But this is more heartfelt and satisfying. Not that I wanted to become a gastroparesis patient to do it, but it's more satisfying, and I feel better if I can get one person that's miserable to laugh, or one person that's gone through what I went through at the beginning, you know, for years with no diagnosis, and just let them know they're not alone. People really do respond, and it is a very, very gratifying calling, which I have chosen now that is it until something else happens in my life. Until then, I will continue to educate people that want it, my doctors, which, again, luckily I have a team that works with me. When I tell them stuff happens, they research it. And I manage it the best I can, but by all means, I still have this disease. But as Mary Angela said, my new purpose in life, my new normal, is helping other patients with digestive disorders feel like they're not alone, we're in it together, and that we are not useless people at all. We all can have a purpose. We all can accomplish something that will make us happy. It just takes a lot to find that.
A lot of people feel because they're ill that, you know, they can't be relied on if they won't volunteer an AGMD, or they just, you know, are in that place where they can't do anything. Nobody would want to even listen to them. But I will tell you honestly, I mean, this organization is built by the unpredictable nature of the disease, and how many times I personally have had to cancel programs or meetings or anything else as a result of my illness. So there's so much flexibility, and it's because we understand we're together in this, and you all make this organization. Now, Marilyn, as a nurse as well, I commend you, and I hope that within your practice area, you are still able to educate people about what you're going through and about motility.
And I feel like I do. A lot of people have told me that they have learned a lot about this disease because of me, and that I am an inspiration because they see me still moving forward, even though they know I may not feel the best. So, I mean, that is inspirational to me in itself.
That's wonderful. And a boost to all our self-esteems. And honestly, a lot of people say you're an inspiration, and I'm sure to all of you. But, you know, sometimes it's used so casually nowadays, oh, you're an inspiration. But truly, you are all such inspiration to me. And, you know, the way that we got poured into this world of motility is not one that we probably expected in our lives. But dealing with what you have, I know all of you were the first ones to sign up, and I kept pushing you out of line because I wanted to be a patient too. All of you here today truly are incredible inspirations. And on that note, we're winding down on time. So I just want to conclude by saying that obviously the attack on one's self-esteem bores deeply into all patients' life on so many levels. The pain of hearing your experiences just exemplifies one of the many challenges that so many of us have to endure in a quiet little ways in our lives. In my own case, losing so much of who I was and all that I had has been a humbling experience, to say the least, as I have moved from my life and what I've had to do and to acceptance by living over 36 years with progressive diseases. One of the greatest lessons I have learned through all of this is what is truly important in life. Everything is temporary and can be taken away from you like a thief in the night. And so each day, as difficult as it may be, I still manage to embrace every single blessing and gift in my life that I have been given. My self-esteem has no doubt been wounded, but my spirit, and it sounds like so many of yours, remains unbroken. As I personally take the focus off of me and direct it to all those who are suffering from digestive motility disorders, I always end these programs saying you are all such tremendous heroes, and I am extremely grateful for the honor of having you join in our discussion here today and to shed light on this important aspect of living with digestive motility disorders. Thank you especially to Laura for assisting with this meeting. Anybody would like to say anything before I give my final closure? No, all right. I want to thank you again, and may God bless you all. Take care.
God bless all of you. This is Laura. It was wonderful to talk to you.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you,
bye-bye.
Everyone.
Have a great day.